Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Man, we're going to test that commitment today because I'll tell you, it's hard. It's hard to operate in a space where common sense dictates that you don't take the side of a single political party all the time. And I know that there are so many of you who understand that, who understand the frustration of that. And one thing I want to keep in mind during the podcast today is what this is all about. It's not about a podcast. It is about a mission to get, I think, the 70% of reasonable people to stick up for themselves, to reject false narratives meant to divide us, to reject unnecessary bills that are meant to divide us, to reject labels that people throw at you to get you to shut up, and to say, no, I'm not going to be quiet anymore because we're the majority, we're reasonable, we're rational, and we don't want political parties to continue to take priority over our families and our neighbors, the people we love, and the state that we love. If you can tell, I'm jacked up today. Right, Nicole?
Very jacked up.
I don't even want to. I'm going to take you briefly behind the scenes of the last half hour. You were good. You didn't look at me like, Brandy, you're stressing me out. I did my hair and makeup in what?
Four minutes? 4.5 minutes, maybe.
Looks pretty good, though. Looks pretty good.
Looking very good.
Because I'll tell you, I was, and we're going to spend the bulk of the show talking about the debate that happened last night over Senate Bill 5599. And I mean, I started to get fired up last night because I said early on in the session when SB 5599 was first introduced and first came up for public testimony and something like 4,500 parents, mostly in opposition, signed up to testify against it. I said that I thought it was a bill that is one of the most dangerous that I've seen in terms of what could come next. And I also said I thought it was a bill that every national news outlet should be talking about. And you know, I'll say leading into this whole conversation, I'm not a parent. And now after this bill, I'm like, do I ever want to become a parent in Washington State? I'm not a parent. And that's why you will never hear me try to wish away the rights of parents. Who am I? Who am I to tell a parent, beyond the obvious that we all agree on, acts of physical abuse, a truly dangerous home environment, who am I to tell a parent, I know better than you, what to do with your kid? And that to me is really what's at the center of this and really at the center of, I think, a dangerous trend in the creeping intrusion of the government into our homes and into your lives. That's what I have a problem with. And as we debate Senate Bill 5599, for those of you who are not familiar with it, maybe this is the first time you're watching or following this particular issue, on its surface, it seems harmless. If you believe what the backers of the bill want you to believe about it, that this is about making sure that kids aren't sleeping on the street. This is about making sure that kids aren't out on the streets, homeless, in dangerous conditions, being sex trafficked. Man, if that was what the bill was about, 100%, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. I wouldn't even have brought up. There are many other bills this session that I could have used this platform to push back against if it were as simple as they want you to believe that it is, but it's not that simple. SB 5599 would allow the government to allow shelters to hide your child's location from you, depending on the reason that your kid went to the shelter. Now, again, if you have a kid who's fleeing from abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and this bill was about making sure that their abuser couldn't find out where they were if they fled and went to a shelter, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. We wouldn't even be having this conversation. But what this bill does is it opens up the state to an entire new realm of reasons to hide your child from you. The bill says that if your child wants to seek protected health care that you either don't support or they don't think you would support, and they show up at a shelter and they tell the shelter, I want to get an abortion, or I want gender care, gender transition care, then under this law, which passed last night in the Washington State House of Representatives, which will be signed by the governor, under this law, the government says that shelter cannot tell you that they have your child or where your kid is. And the reason I've taken an issue with this is, to me, this is the state comparing physical abuse in the home to parents who might have some questions and concerns about their young child, their minor child, making medical decisions that could alter the course of their life. That's what this is about. This isn't even about debating the issue of transgenderism, to me. This isn't about disliking transgender youth. This isn't about not wanting anyone ever to do any sort of gender therapy or transition. That's not even what it's about. It's about parental rights. And when does the government have the right to creep inside your home, inside your parenting, and to tell you what good parenting is? To compare physical abuse to a disagreement with your kid over a medical intervention. And the reason why I have been all over this bill, again, it's not, people will say, and we'll get to this, that, oh, you're just anti, you hate trans people. That's what this is about. It's not at all about that. And reasonable, rational people know that. What I'm worried about is what bills like this will lead to. When this is signed into law and you have a law on the books where the state is reacting to physical abuse in the home in the same way they're reacting to a household where a parent doesn't want their child to get gender care, what next? What next? Because to me, the state can take a child from an abusive home. Somebody's calling me from Spokane. Maybe they're watching live. To me, the state can take a child from an abusive home. So if they've now said that not supporting your child's decision to transition is akin to abuse under this law, what would stop the state in the future from saying, we're going to take your child from your care if you won't let them get or don't support their gender identity? You don't support reproductive health care that they want. That's what I'm worried about. So what I want to do is go through. There was approximately 3 hours of debate on Senate Bill 5599 last night. And I want to go through piece by piece some of the worst speeches that were given on the floor. Some of the most nonsensical arguments that were made on the floor. Because I know that the vast majority of people in Washington State aren't sitting up at 9 p.m. watching TVW. Some of you were, and we were following along in the comments and everything, because I posted the live stream to Facebook and to Twitter. But as I was sitting there and I was telling Nicole, I took pages and pages of notes. So that when we came in today, and the reason I was so rushed today is we had so much sound to dig through. I had pages and pages of notes, and then I had my stack of sticky notes where I was making time cues. And so Nicole comes in and it was just like an absolute disaster trying to sort through it. But some of these notes are basically a time code and saying, this makes no sense. A time code saying, you have to effing be kidding me. And so it was about going through some of these arguments that were made and today taking the time to really systematically explain to you the ridiculous of what happened last night and of the arguments that are being made and the gaslighting and the misinformation and the disinformation. But first, I'll just, in case you didn't see it, play the moment for you where Senate Bill 5599 passed in the state house.
The question before the body is final passage of engrossed substitute Senate Bill 5599 as amended by the House. The Speaker's about to open the roll call machine. The Speaker has opened the roll call machine.
Madam Speaker, there are 57 yeas, 39 nays, 2 excused.
having received a constitutional majority, engrossed substitute Senate Bill 5599, as amended by the House, is declared passed.
Passed along party lines. Now, let me go through the rationale that was given from Democrats, both as they worked their way through amendments that were raised and also upon final reading and ultimately final passage of the bill. Now, their entire, I think, overarching premise revolves around the idea that not supporting a child's desired gender is the same thing as physical abuse.
Ideally, of course, all families would have a warm, loving, and supportive approach, an accepting family where parents would act as good role models and buffers. But sadly, the reality is that some youth don't.
I can't in good conscience vote for an amendment that could send vulnerable kids back to an unsafe environment.
I want it to be a reality that every child is loved and supported at home, and that they are accepted. But I also want, and we need, to make sure it is a reality that they are safe.
This bill is about shelter and safety.
About shelter and safety. And again, they're operating on the assumption that your child is not safe in your home if you don't support their desired gender. That they're not safe there. And that's a pretty startling assumption for these lawmakers to make. That if you have a disagreement with your child, and albeit that's a very serious disagreement, that is a frightening thing for any parent to face. When your child feels so strongly that they are not in the right body, they're confused about who they are, they're concerned about their place in the world. I can't even imagine a parent having to go through that. But to act on the assumption that even a majority of parents faced with that situation would then provide an environment for their child that is not safe is egregious. Now, Democrats went on to argue that the state of Washington, if you, a parent, does not support your child's desired gender, that the state of Washington must step in because you can't be trusted to parent.
Kids need us to look out for them. We have an obligation to protect them. We, the state of Washington, are looking out for them.
We must step in. We must provide a place for this child.
We have an obligation to step in and be a safety net for our most vulnerable youth.
We must step in. We, the state of Washington. We have to intervene. Because again, they're making the assumption that you cannot possibly, as a parent, have a disagreement with your child about their gender while still making sure that that child has a loving home. And I categorically disagree with that, and I categorically deny that. I will say they are throwing out some startling statistics. I have heard some pretty inaccurate statistics throughout the course of this legislative session. And so I will say I don't know the extent to which these stats that they're throwing out are true. I will say that I do not doubt that kids who are struggling with their gender identity are having difficult thoughts. It doesn't strike me as untrue that they might have higher rates of suicide, higher rates of suicidal ideation, and I don't want to argue that, and I don't want to dispute that, and I don't want to downplay that. But I will say this. Democrats are using that as a poison pill to insert in there so that if you don't like this bill, then you are okay with kids killing themselves. That you're okay with this group of kids having a higher rate of suicide. That if the government does not pass this bill, if the government does not hide your child's location from you, then they will kill themselves. And that is a theme that we heard over and over and over last night.
People do die from a lack of love and support.
Transgender and non-binary youth face a very high risk of suicide. Kids' lives are literally at stake.
And in fact, 52% of LGBTQ youth have considered committing suicide.
82% of trans individuals have suicidal ideation. Every 45 seconds in this country, an LGBTQ kid attempts suicide.
And again, that's awful. If those stats are even remotely true, it's horrible. It's horrifying. But to suggest that the only way to prevent these kids from killing themselves is to hide their location from their parents? To what? Leave them at a shelter for runaway youth while they seek the health care that they want? To suggest that that is somehow going to make a child happier or healthier? To disconnect them from their home and their family? To suggest that that is going to do anything in the world to make that child a happier, healthier adult in the long run is so disingenuous. And again, it's fear-mongering to say, if we don't do this, kids will die. If we don't do this, kids will die. And to make you feel guilty about questioning the intent of the bill. Don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. And then I have to say, one of the most egregious arguments made, and it was made multiple times by Democrats last night, is that this bill isn't just for the runaway youth. This bill is to help parents.
We have an obligation to support them and their families, and this bill does both.
How is hiding your child's location from you helping you? How is that helping you? That is gaslighting to the extreme. You know, they have a provision in there that will say that they'll work on convincing the child to go through resources for reunification. But it would be the child's choice. You don't have a choice. If they don't want you to know where they are, the state respects that. This bill isn't helping you. This bill is not designed to help parents. And they say, you know, there was all these arguments. And there were some really simple amendments put out there that, hey, you know, if you've got someone who decides to run away from home and they want to go to a youth shelter, fine. But tell the parents, you know, tell the parents where their kids are so at least they're not sitting at home at night wondering, is my kid dead? Can you imagine? I don't have a kid, and can you imagine? Having no clue, thinking your child's missing. That they could have been kidnapped, you don't know. But Democrats want to ease those concerns because they say, oh, well, under this bill, the state, the Department of Child and Youth Family Services, they'll give the parents a call.
That would be so sad and scary not to know where your child is. But again, that is why we have these youth shelters and host homes notifying DCYF.
I would be panicked. I would be searching. I would be doing everything possible to try to find him. In this legislation, if a child does come for these compelling reasons to a host home, DCYF will be notified, and they will have an opportunity to notify parents and provide reconciliation services.
Right, but they're not going to tell the parents where their kids are. The state calling, sure, that helps. The state calls and says, hey, your kid, we can't tell you where they are, but we've got them. We know where they are. If you're a parent and you don't know where your child is, it doesn't help that the state calls. It still doesn't fix the underlying issue. And that was the point made by Representative Chris Corey, who's a Republican representing the area around Yakima.
First of all, she rightly said if there was a disagreement and her child left, she would be out searching, trying to find their child. The underlying bill would not tell her where her child was. The state would allow the child to be put in a place where they wouldn't be notified. Mr. Speaker, that's the problem. That's the concern, is her own fears wouldn't be addressed. She would want to know where that child is, but the state would say you don't have a right to know. That is our concern.
Yeah. And so for them to say, oh, well, the state will be called. The state will be called. It's not an issue. The shelter will call the state. The state is not the parent. And that is the whole point. And I had to laugh at this clip where it was a Democratic lawmaker who's arguing, trying to argue, this isn't about separating kids from their parents, but then had to realize that, oh, wait, actually, we are separating kids from their parents.
This bill focuses on making sure our youth are safe. And it does also focus on helping reunify families. But the key is reunify. We're not separating. These kids are separated at this point of the bill. We do seek to get them safety, reunification.
We're not separating. Well, they are separated at that point. They are physically separated. But we're not separating. Yeah, we're definitely not separating. Now, let's get into some of the just blatant factual inaccuracies, arguments that don't make a lick of sense, that can be easily pushed back upon if anybody cares to do so. So there is an argument that without this law in place, without Senate Bill 5599 in place, that trans kids who run away from home have no other option, no other choice, no other place to go than to live on the streets.
If we remove the options of host homes for these children to have a safe place to go to, it's one less place that they have to find the safety from the streets.
Are we not going to do something? Am I going to let them stay out on the street, homeless, at risk? At risk to being picked up by somebody who will say all the right things. Am I going to risk this child being in the middle of the cold, not knowing whether they're going to have somewhere to go tonight, all because they can't go home to a place where we don't know what those threats are going to actually be?
No, you don't have to risk the child being out in the cold, because the shelters exist. No one is saying that the child can't go to a shelter. They are just saying, and I'll let Representative Jim Walsh say it very simply.
Provide the place, but tell the parents where the child is.
Again, there is nothing under current law that says that these children cannot go to a shelter. There are options already that exist for these kids. The argument being made is, if they have a parent or legal guardian, that you tell them where their child is so they are not sitting up sick to their stomachs wondering where their kid is and if their kid is even alive. So it is a complete false flag for them to make the argument that without this bill, the kids have nowhere to go. They can still go to a shelter, but their parents will be notified of where they are. And that is really one of the keys here. I want to keep going down on the list of some of the testimony that I pulled, because there were some moments where some of these lawmakers were telling stories about their experience with trans kids or runaway kids, and pointing to circumstances that are not even remotely relevant to the issue they say this bill is solving for. Listen.
Mr. Speaker, I spent almost a decade working with at-risk and homeless youth and their families for a local organization that served youth throughout an entire county with very different communities. This youth was transgender and had the support of their parents, had the support of their sibling, and had the support of a lot of their extended family. But they didn't have the support of their community to a level where they felt like their family was being targeted, like their family was being come after by community members because of the choice that they felt that they made. This youth decided to run away. They decided to run away to protect their family. This is not an easy decision for anyone to make, let alone a teenager. Mr. Speaker, this teen ended up getting victimized out on the streets like many others do. And thankfully, after a while, was able to find safe shelter in the organization that I worked on. I had the privilege of working with this youth, and through case management and our prevention program, we were able to get that youth back home, but we got them back. We got them back home with the skills and the tools that they needed and that their family needed to make sure that they could be safer.
How is that example relevant to anything that we're discussing? He's talking about a kid who had the full support of their family, but in his words, whose family was under scrutiny from people in the neighborhood because their kid was transgender. And so the kid decides to run away. How is that relevant? Because clearly, if you're saying the kid had a positive relationship with his family, they supported him wholeheartedly, you would still allow under this bill someone like that or a kid like that would need to go to a shelter and his parents wouldn't be notified? If that child's parents support them wholeheartedly, why would you need to hide that child's location from the parents? So again, false flag. Doesn't make any sense. I don't know why you would bring up that example in a debate over this bill. Now, I want to play a couple pieces from comments made by State Representative Michelle Caldear, who's a Republican. And the reason why I think her remarks are particularly relevant is she's been a foster parent. She has had kids come to her in all, measure of circumstances, horrific circumstances. And she says that, first of all, just the simple act of a child running away isn't enough to strip someone of their parental rights, and that is true even in egregious cases of true parental abuse or neglect.
If a child runs away, the parents still have their rights. I mean, as a foster parent, I've had about 50 kids come through my door, and I will tell you, they've been beaten, sexually abused by their parents, they've been kicked out. The parents still have rights. We have a whole system where we have to terminate their rights in order to allow them to become adopted.
Yeah, and she says that this is so true. It's one of the most reasonable, rational things that I heard all evening, which is we have all these protections in place for parents who are truly engaged in abuse and neglect, sexual abuse, the worst types of things that you can imagine going on in a household. We still have protections in place for those parents. But you're saying now if they have some sort of disagreement over gender identity where abuse might not even be something that has been brought forth or alleged, that you want to strip someone, in essence, of their right as a parent to know where their kid is.
We don't even allow that if the children were sexually abused.
The good member has 30 seconds remaining.
And that's the piece I don't get.
And you see, she just is like, I can't even wrap my mind around this. There's a provision in the bill, and it was brought up last night, that's talking about, abuse in the home and how it specifically provides an exception where if a child is in a home where domestic violence is occurring, but the domestic violence isn't against the child, that in and of itself doesn't constitute abuse to the point where you wouldn't call the parents to let them know where the kid is. So you're telling me you've carved out an exception for that? An exception to say, yeah, even if there's domestic violence in the home, we still got to let those parents know where the kid is. You've carved out an exception for that, but you aren't giving an exception for loving parents who just have a disagreement about gender ideology, gender identity? Does that make any sense in the world? And I think one of the most troubling things is, throughout all of this, again, I mentioned this at the beginning, they've tried to say and make it seem very innocent that this is just about housing kids. You don't want kids out on the street. This is simply about finding a place, a safe place for kids to be.
This bill is about getting kids housed. That's what this bill is about.
Yeah, that's Representative Tana Sen. The only issue is that if that's the case, why did she just a few minutes later say this?
You know what? We can't wait. States across our country are making it illegal to seek gender-affirming care and reproductive services. As they seek this medical care, as they try and do what's best for themselves, I want them to know that we truly see them.
So is it really about just housing, getting kids off the street, regardless of the circumstances they're going through? Or is it about pushing this gender ideology? And again, we can have reasonable debates on both, but you kind of got to choose how you're going to sell the bill. And I'll end with this one clip, because I said at the beginning that I'm not a parent. So I would never, short of egregious cases of obvious abuse and neglect, I would never tell you how to parent. I would never criticize someone else's parenting. But I was just struck by the testimony of this Democratic state representative who was almost playing out on the floor of the House how she imagines these parents treat their transgender kids.
It's the combination, the tone, the tenor, the threats, the isolation, the words that are constantly told. You cannot be uniquely you. You cannot be something other than what I desire for you to be. And if you do not follow my rules, you cannot be here.
Now, there's just one problem with her opinion on that.
I'm not a parent.
She sure has a lot of opinions, though, about your parenting, about what your rights should be as a parent, about what is or is not acceptable for you to believe in as a parent. Again, I'm not a parent. But I'm not sitting here trying to take your rights away. I'm not sitting here judging you because you want to say, and remember, that's what this is about. This isn't about parents who are abusive or who neglect their kids or don't want to play any role in their kids' lives. This is about parents who care so damn much that even if they are having a serious disagreement with their child, even if they might not agree on what their child wants to do with their life, on what their child's gender is, on reproductive health care, even if they're having such a serious disagreement with their kid, they want to know that their kid is safe. This is about parents who care that much. And so to paint them as bad parents, to paint them as abusive parents for caring too much, says a lot about every single member of the House, every single member of the Senate, and about the governor who I know will sign this bill. It says a lot about what they think about you as parents. And it tells me that they believe that they know what's best for your kids. And I am sorry, but that is a very, very dangerous place for the government to be. Coming up in a moment, we're going to get to our segment, Unbelievable, because I was viciously, unfairly labeled for what I think is a very reasonable, rational opinion. Of course, I think all my opinions are reasonable and rational on Senate Bill 5599. But I'm actually glad that this particular former politician decided to be brave and attack me on Twitter, because it speaks to the heart of what this podcast is about. So we'll get to that in a moment. But first, we've been talking about Sell with Wes, sellwithwes.com. Wes Jones, one of our great new sponsors to the podcast, an awesome real estate agent. We had him in. If you haven't seen the clip on social media yet, we talked about his former relationship with Dory Monson and the time he spent as a sponsor on that show. And it was just really fun getting to know him. But when it comes to the real estate market, you might know that things have been a little up and down, and Wes knows that too. Certainly as a real estate agent, he's very attuned to what's going on in the market. But he was telling me that he does see a little window of opportunity here for folks who need to sell but who've been a little bit hesitant because you don't have this crazy market where people are throwing cash at you and competing offers. But he said he thinks that we're in this little window right now where there is an opportunity for competing offers if you feel like it's time for you to sell your home. So if you go to sell with Wes.com, that's sellwithwes.com. He can give you some honest advice, listen to the circumstances that you're in and talk about, you know, what he thinks the timing looks like and whether it would be best for you. And also they have a really great innovative marketing plan where they'll try to sell your home locally. They'll list it internationally to try to get you as many offers as possible. So visit sellwithwes.com. That's again, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, I want to get to, as I said, the vicious unfair attacks on my character. No, I'm kidding. I'm very used to this by now. And in fact, it's why I do this show. Let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. So this speaks to 100% what I try to get you guys on board with every single episode of the podcast. To one, just not care what people think about your opinion on things. I mean, be willing to have a dialogue with folks, be willing to open your mind to different ideas. That's something that we try to do on the show, especially on our Sunday subscriber show. There's a little pitch for that. So certainly don't be closed-minded, but don't let people convince you that if you disagree with them, you're an extremist. If you disagree with them, you're crazy. If you disagree with them, you're right wing or left wing. If you're a free thinker, and sometimes, you know, your opinion isn't going to fall right or left, you're just judging everything by the facts, then don't allow people to convince you or to gaslight you into thinking that you're somehow an extremist. Because that is the way that they keep reasonable people silence. Because I will tell you, the left and the right, Republicans and Democrats, know that independents are the majority, that moderates are the majority. And so, of course, they'd want to silence you. And the quickest way to silence someone is to scare them into silence. So let me read for you. I found out yesterday, just before 5 p.m., that the final bill that Democrats would run before the 5 p.m. cutoff yesterday was this Senate Bill 5599 on allowing government-sanctioned kidnapping of your kids. So I tweeted that out and I said, Democrats are going to slip this bill in for a vote just before the 5 p.m. cutoff. And I, you know, linked to an op-ed that I wrote about it earlier this week. And this is the response from former Pierce County Councilman Derek Young. Are you ready for it? He wrote, apparently, this is what you have to do to cash those right-wing checks. The bill is to protect kids fleeing abuse, but the nuts are out and money is to be made. I don't think I've ever been called a nut before. I've been called right-wing.
Well, maybe not on
many times.
Twitter that you've noticed.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's called me a nut, you know? And so I had to laugh at this. There's a couple things there. There's this constant theme, this drumbeat from folks who disagree with my opinion on Twitter, that this whole thing, this podcast, Nicole, all of this is a grift. That it's a grift for money. That I'm spewing right-wing opinions that I don't even believe, and it's a grift for money. Which I find hilarious. Because if I was in this for the money, I would have kept my $200,000 a year job in TV news. Don't you think? Don't you think that would have been a much easier way to make a living?
Yeah.
To keep my very high paying job in TV news?
Right.
Somebody's rather
paying
than
your own benefit,
getting benefits,
yeah.
401k.
Right.
Why would I walk away from a well paying job in TV news to start a podcast originally out of the spare bedroom of my house, mm-hmm. and to continuously during the week have to beg you guys to subscribe for $5 a month, which I hate doing. I hate being like, subscribe to the show, give us $5 of your hard-earned money, but that's how we make the show possible. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for every single person who supports it. Don't you think if money was the reason I was doing this, that I would have kept my job in TV? And what I found is that they'll call things a grift as a way to be dismissive of it, as a way to demean me, as a way to suggest that my intentions aren't sincere, that I can't possibly believe the things I'm saying. But I do. I will stand by every single thing I have ever said on the podcast. And at times when I've changed my mind, I come back the next episode and I tell you so. This idea that I have to say this, that the only reason I'm opposed to Senate Bill 5599 is not because it is a dangerous, dangerous bill. And it's a dangerous precedent of the government's intrusion into your homes. Can't be because of that. It's because I have right-wing checks to cash another theme I hear about a lot on Twitter, that I'm funding this podcast through dark right-wing money, which must mean that if you're paying $5 a month for the podcast, you must be a dark right-wing force. And now, do we have an affiliation with a political organization? Yes, Future 42. We do segments for them on the show every Monday. And I'm very proud to be an ambassador for Future 42, which is a coalition of center-right Republicans trying to bring balance back to the state, a mission I believe in very, very much. Now, do we get advertising revenue from Future 42? Yes, it accounts for roughly 7%, 6%, 7% of all the money the podcast brings in. Just like Eastside Weight Loss Clinic pays us for advertising. Just like we get advertising for the other sponsors on the show. That's how this works. Every news station, every TV station in America, every radio station in America operates based on ad revenue. So again, the idea that I have to, and I'm making up my opinion on Senate Bill 5599 because I got to cash those right-wing checks, is absurd. And it's not as if we're trying to hide an affiliation. And by the way, it's my personal affiliation as an ambassador for Future 42. We announced it with a 2.5-minute video that I plastered all over social media. So it's hardly a secret. It's hardly dark right-wing money. And I'm hardly ashamed of it. In fact, I much like going around and speaking to crowds with Project 42. They invite me quite a bit. I was just out in the Tri-Cities the other day, and I'm going to be up in Bellingham later this year, and I'm going to have a great time. So it doesn't mean anything. But again, if I go back to Derek Young's tweet, where he says, apparently this is what you have to do to cash those right-wing checks. The bill is to protect kids fleeing abuse, but the nuts are out and money is to be made. There's that line again, protect kids fleeing abuse. So there he is saying, former Pierce County Councilman Derek Young, thank God it's former, that he believes it's abuse not to support your child's desired gender or gender transition, or that it is akin to abuse to have some serious questions and want to say in your child's medical care and want to know where your kid is at night. Is that abuse? That sounds like the extreme position to me. But what I want to encourage you and learn from this is not just, woe is me, the trolls are attacking me on Twitter again. That's my everyday, all day life. But I want you to see what he's trying to do here. I want you to see what he's trying to do here, because as you start to find your voice, as you start to speak out, people will try to do it to you. And I don't want you to give in, and I want you to be brave, and I want you not to care. He's trying to use labels to scare me out of speaking up. He's trying to use labels to pit people against me so that all shut up. And he knows that in this state, in this area, in this region, calling someone right-wing, a right-wing nut, is about as bad a label as you can get. And he hopes that he can convince people to trust me less, to listen to me less, because he's calling me a right-wing nut. Here's the thing. I know I'm not a right-wing nut. And when people attack you for rational opinions, you should know the same thing. They're doing it. They're using the labels to scare you into silence. They're using the labels because they know that they cannot debate you on the facts and the merits. This whole thing, contrary to Derek's opinion, because this is about us apparently getting uber wealthy, working like 90 hours a week and just all sorts of in a mess every day. Contrary to that opinion, that this is about enriching ourselves. This is about taking the majority of people, I think is about 70%, who want the two parties to work together, who aren't happy with one party rule, who want government to function, who want loyalty to people, not to party. It's about trying to convince every single one of you that your voice in this fight will make a difference. And that you shouldn't be scared out of fighting because people will throw labels like this at you. You're not crazy. You're not extremist. And you know that. You know that about yourself. I know that about myself. I'm not going to let some washed up council member tell me I'm an extremist, that I'm right wing, that I'm doing this for dark money. That's not going to shut me up. And it shouldn't shut you up either. And giving in to unbelievable labels is about the worst thing you can do. So be brave, okay? I know I'm well equipped to handle the abuse because I've been handling it for so damn long. But I know that you guys can do it too. And I want to set that example to say, I'm not going to back down when people come at me with unreasonableness, when people cancel speaking events because I have controversial opinions. I'm not going to back down. If anything, it got me all riled up today. It got me invigorated to come and put on a good show for you and to inform you about what happened with this bill last night. So anyway, that tweet was unbelievable. But it's to be expected. All right, our newest sponsor on the show, MethodWorks Consulting. They do all things tech for your business. And whether you've got some new employees and you're like, gosh, I got to get them set up with a new computer and I don't really know where to start or what I need, whether you want to migrate information to the cloud or, and this is really important, data security. I mean, one data breach can wipe out a small business. And I think, and just coming from the perspective of someone who started this business and was completely out of my depth, I'm not sure data security is the first thing you think about. But the owner of MethodWorks, Mark Harmsworth, who's actually a former Washington State representative, very pro-business, moderate Republican, that was one of the things he told me when we were talking about adding them as a sponsor, is a lot of small businesses don't know, like, if you have a data breach that puts your information at risk, your customer's information, that could be it for your business. And so what he's doing for listeners and viewers to Undivided is he's offering a free security review and 1 month of free security monitoring, which is awesome. So then you can see like, okay, let me see the service that you provide and if this is going to work for us and if I see value in it. So visit methodworks.com. That's methodworks.com. But make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast so you can get that free security review and that 1 month of free security monitoring. Okay, I want to get to coming up at the end of the show in the sanity check. I am going to play what I thought was the speech on the floor last night that most mimicked how I feel about SB 5599. What I found to be the most sane speech all night in 3 hours given on the floor of the House. So I'm going to end with that insanity check. But I did want to touch on one other thing because it's really important to know. So there was a story, and I believe it actually came out yesterday, that Bellingham is taking it, or wanted to at least, and we'll get to that, upon itself to try to deal with the drug crisis. And there have been other cities that have done this, including Richland, Marysville, Linwood, and Toppenish, where they've come out and said, okay, we're in this crazy situation because of the Blake decision at the state Supreme Court, which nullified our state's felony drug possession statute. And in response to that last legislative session, lawmakers put this temporary Band-Aid on it. But it wasn't a Band-Aid at all. It basically said, like, if there's someone using meth in front of a cop and the cop says, hey, you can't do that, but I'm required to make sure you get 3 warnings before anything happens to you. That was like the fix, the temporary solution to Blake. The problem is they could get 1 warning in Marysville, 1 warning in Everett, 1 warning in Seattle, and there was no system tracking any of it. So it was nothing at all. So it led some of these cities to put municipal laws on the books that would allow their officers to actually enforce a law around substance abuse in public. And I really applauded. And in fact, I think we had Marysville Mayor John Nearing on the show to talk about this when they did it, because he's like, you know, we don't know what else to do. The state isn't giving us an option. We have a drug crisis proliferating on our streets. We have to have a carrot and a stick. And so Bellingham becomes just the latest city. And it's kind of interesting because Bellingham is, I mean, you're from that area. It's pretty progressive, right?
Oh, very. We call it hippie town.
Oh, hippie town. Well, that's not very nice. No, I'm just kidding. And it's interesting to see Bellingham do it, because I think that is an example of how bad things have become. That even in a place like Bellingham that has had some very progressive policies in place, that they're like, look, we got to have some punishments and some recourse when you have this blatant drug crisis spilling out into every facet of society. But here's the problem.
And it was interesting because I don't think you knew this when we started the day today, because this was just something that was actually brought up to me yesterday. Because there was all these people like, oh, go Bellingham, go Bellingham. Here's the thing. That law, it's not going to matter soon. So we mentioned that the legislature just passed a watered down fix for the Blake decision. Some Republicans voted for it because they're like, it's better than nothing. And some Republicans voted against it because they're like, this isn't going to do very much. You know, it diverts people to treatment at every single juncture. And there was just the thought that, okay, at some point there has to be more consequences than that. But there is a section in that bill that passed that says that there can be no local preemption, which means that the bill they just passed at the state level, which is very, very weak, prohibits these cities from passing ordinances to preempt the state law. So all of that's for nothing. I'll read, and Nicole put this section in for me. It says, in section six, if you want to look at the Blake fix, section six, a new section is added to chapter 69.50 RCW to read as follows. The state of Washington hereby fully occupies and preempts the entire field of drug paraphernalia regulation within the boundaries of the state, including regulation of the use, selling, giving, delivery, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Cities, towns, and counties or other municipalities may enact only those laws and ordinances relating to drug paraphernalia that are specifically authorized by state law and are consistent with this chapter. Such local ordinances must have the same penalty as provided for by state law. Local laws and ordinances that are inconsistent with, more restrictive than, or exceed the requirements of state law may not be enacted and are preempted and repealed, regardless of the nature of the code, charter, or home rule status of each city, town, county, or municipality. So no ability. They passed this weak, watered-down thing to deal with our drug crisis. And no ability for these cities that have come up with really creative solutions to fit what they're dealing with. The drug crisis, I would say it's bad most places. But there are cities that are having particularly unique challenges where leaders have stepped up and say, okay, let's do something to fit our needs. And it's not allowed. So if you saw that Bellingham story, just thought you ought to know, as someone informed me yesterday, that that doesn't matter what Bellingham wants to do as soon as the watered-down Blake fix is signed into law. Before I get to your comments on the day, before I get to my daily read on my weight loss, I just wanted to note that usually we do Florida Report on Thursday. And I got permission from my sister to tell you that she was in the ICU last week for a couple days. It happened right after our Thursday show with her last week. She has really bad asthma. And I won't share too much of her personal stuff, but basically she had a really bad asthma attack, had to be taken to the hospital in an ambulance, was put in the ICU for 2 days. I was terrified on Friday. And I think she got to go home on Easter. And she's just exhausted. Like, I talked to her this morning, her voice is gone. And so she's not going to be here today, but I did want, because I know, you know, we're all a big family here. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll ask her about it next week. But Miranda's doing fine. She's out of the ICU. And now she has promised that she's going to take her asthma situation more seriously.
Okay, we're holding her to that.
She's very, since you use the word hippie, my sister's like a bougie hippie. She's like an uber, like, libertarian. Ooh, that's a
great description.
Like, anti-government in the sense of, like, she doesn't want to be part of the system.
Right.
And so she's always been, like, very, like, she doesn't go to the doctor very much, and she doesn't, like, take her health as seriously as I think she should. And I think this was a huge wake-up call for her, because, like, when you can't breathe, that's about as serious as it gets. So anyway.
Yes, I'm glad she's doing better.
Send your well wishes for my sister, and I'll pass them along to her. But it was a very scary weekend, but she is okay, and I'm hopeful she's going to be more serious about regulating her health.
We'll get an extra long Florida report next week.
Yes, because I mean, it was like it was an intense situation. Mm-hmm. Speaking about health, my health has improved dramatically since November because I've been on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan since the beginning of November, and I've been showing you pictures of my before and after, which is mortifying to me every single time I do it. But, you know, they are a sponsor on the show, and I'm very proud of losing most of my COVID weight. I've just got a couple pounds left that I'm trying to lose before my bachelorette party and my wedding. And to me, it's not about like, oh, I have to be the exact same weight I was before the pandemic, but I do feel significantly better. I just look better in clothes. My face is back to how it was. My TV days.
I lost some weight recently too, yeah. And you just feel healthier.
You do.
Every day just feels easier.
It does. And then mm-hmm. I'm not like, man, I just get on a total tangent on these ads. But mm-hmm. like when you've gained weight, I'll try on 100 outfits. And they'll be like, I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. Because like nothing looks good on me. Or I'll buy a bunch of clothes thinking it's the clothes that are the problem.
And it's exactly not. What I do.
It's like all these clothes will look good on me if I just get back in shape. Mm-hmm. So it's like, anyway. So try the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. Visit EastsideWeightLossClinic.com and you can schedule just a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Coogan. And he'll tell you if it's right for you. He'll kind of go through the plan for you. The nice things for me are, and I've been very clear on this, it's not magic. I could not eat what I was eating when I gained 42 pounds in 3 years. So you do have to eat healthier, but you can eat real food. There's no prepackaged meals. It's very structured, which I like because then I can just treat it like a job and just get through it. And I lost more than 30 pounds in 60 days. So if you want to drop some weight before summer, this is no brainer. I'd highly recommend it because especially if you're just carrying extra weight around that your body's not used to carrying, man, it'll just melt off and you'll feel so good. So anyway, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right, we can take questions from the live stream. I'm sure we had, and I didn't look at the live stream at all today because I was really in the zone. So let me get to some of your comments. YouTube super comment. Bill Biz giving me $20 for a super comment.
Again.
Well, Bill, let me ask you, is this dark right wing money? If this is dark right wing money, the internet says I can't take it. So I'm going to need an accounting of your political beliefs.
Twitter says you can't take it.
Okay, yeah. Let's see. Bill says, wow, Brandy, I thought I heard a familiar voice. It's great to see that producer Nicole has joined the show. I probably listen to Dory almost every day. Best wishes and success to both of you. Yeah, I love it. And I've seen so many comments of people just saying how nice it is to hear your voice again. And just
so
like,
sweet.
Well, it is sweet,
they are the sweetest.
You were also part of their routine. And that's like when you listen to the same thing for 3 hours a day, and then not only is Dory gone, but you are gone, and it was totally different for people. And so I think they just love, and I keep hearing like in the comments, like, let Nicole talk more. So I got to let you talk more.
That's okay. I actually find my own voice pretty annoying. So I appreciate people don't find me as annoying as I think I,
no,
my
you're
voice
not
can
annoying.
Be.
And I love this addition of having someone to talk to on the podcast.
Right.
And like throw my crazy ideas at, you know, and will admonish me when I curse, which I read comments yesterday that you can't listen to the show with your kids if I'm cursing. So I am going to work on that.
Should we tell them about our little disagreement?
So, yeah, but I'll just, I don't want to swear because I just told people I wouldn't swear.
Say BS.
So, okay. So Nicole was telling me yesterday, because we were reading those comments that said, hey, I can't, you know, watch if you're going to mm-hmm. swear. And I was like, what did I say? I was like, I would never say the F word. Maybe like once it slipped, but I would never do that. And Nicole said, I said S-H-I-T. And I was like, no, I would never say just S-H-I-T. Because, like, it just sounds gross. You know, I would never, like, I couldn't picture myself saying that. So Nicole goes back through the entire show. She's like, I swear. She's looking for it. And then she plays it, and it was me saying bull, S-H-I-T. And right. I'm like, that's totally different. It's totally different when you add bull to the beginning.
Either one is not allowed on the radio I was formerly a part of. And I don't know that it would be considered different to parents who are listening with their children in the car.
All right. I want to be considered a classy lady. So I'll just, you know, and Mike has told me this too. He's like, you know, if somebody's in their car listening to the podcast version, you should probably just keep it.
It's always just jarring. I'm still not used to it. Yeah. There's other podcasts I listen to as well. And when they say it, or I just, it sends this little full body chill.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Facebook, Luke says, our state wants to create a society of subjects and remove the ability and right to be citizens. Now that they have passed these many bills this legislative session that deny us our constitutional rights, they will continue to remove our, it says see more. You didn't paste the whole thing. All it says is continue to remove our dot, dot, dot.
I'll find it for
you. Okay, you find it. On YouTube, Aaron Lang says, yes. All maintain that the reason our opposition, he's talking, referring to Republicans, he says, fail in this state is our collective failure to organize and communicate effectively. We have to rally around this. Taylor says, amazing how much power parents have before the child is born. You can literally end its life, but once they're born, not the government gets all the power. That's a pretty good point. Let's see. Sarah, Over Bay. I stayed awake last night, so upset this was passing. As a mother of six and a foster parent, thank you for being a foster parent. I know that's not an easy job. I have cared for abused kids in my home and have communicated with their biological parents, sending pics and videos so they know their kids are safe. Even known abusive parents have rights in this state. As a foster parent, I can't even get foster kids' haircuts without biological parent permission. But the state can help kids with gender-affirming hormones and surgeries. And I agree. I think, and again, we can have these two conversations about... you know, the transgender issue in youth, and then keeping the location of your child away from you. And I think that has been the key for Democrats, is painting it as a either you like trans kids or you're against them thing, when that's not really what most of us are arguing about. It's the parental rights aspect of it and the common sense aspect of it. You found the rest of his comment?
I did.
Okay. Let's see. Luke said, they will continue to move our rights and thus make us subjects of the government, and no longer we will have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Patricia says, I agreed with you so many times, and I'm not right wing, just looking for some make sense in for someone to make sense in politics. And that's the thing, is that you're not right wing. I'm not right wing. How many times do I disagree with Republicans on things? And it's such a lazy argument to say right wing. And also with Democrats, I like to think that I use nuance when I talk about Democrats. I've given moderate Democrats a lot of credit this legislative session. And when I was talking about what I called a small faction of the Democratic Party, a progressive wing that was blocking movement on some public safety issues, I made sure to qualify it. I didn't say it was like, oh, the entire left wing. I said it was a small faction of progressive Democrats. So it's so lazy. And you see this time and time again. They will use right wing. It's why President Trump, or President Biden, the White House on his account always says MAGA Republicans, because they know that there's a connotation there and they want to make people feel a certain way, even though they're talking about things that aren't MAGA. It's really, really strange. Okay, well, I appreciate you guys watching. I'm going to end the way we always end, with a check for your sanity. So as I mentioned, I watched the entirety of the debate on Senate Bill 5599 yesterday, and there were a lot of remarks that I did agree with and that I thought were very valuable additions to the conversation. But there was one speech in particular that, to me, it summed up kind of my opinion on not only the transgender issue, but also the issue we're debating, which is parental rights. But I thought it was so dang reasonable and rational and thoughtful and caring that I wanted to play the whole thing for you, because I just really appreciated it. And you know, watching this testimony where all this absolute bull was just flying left and right, to hear this, I was like, wow, that was nice. Now I don't feel like drinking so much. And the comments came from Representative Skylar Rood, who is a Republican who represents the area around Walla Walla. And again, I'm going to play it for you in its entirety.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just want to open by saying that I support trans people. I think that trans youth, adult trans people, I think that some of these choices that we're talking about are the correct choices. Transitioning is the right choice for some people. And many trans people are fulfilled after making those choices. There's a really inconvenient truth here, and that is that bodies develop far faster than our brains. It's not fair. It's actually quite unfair that at a time where biologically maybe it makes sense to make a choice, a youth is not in a place to be competent in making those choices. So that's really my only concern here, is young people making these life-altering choices that may be the right choice for them eventually. It may not. But making that choice at a time that I think we all agree, we have tobacco ages and marijuana ages and alcohol and for the purpose of signing contracts and all these different things, when we consider someone an adult capable of making these choices. I am concerned that this bill may interfere with loving parents. There are plenty of parents out there that are screw-ups and don't treat their kids appropriately. But there are a lot of loving parents out there that may support their child in some of these choices down the road, but might feel that it's not an appropriate time at 13 or 14 or 15 years old. And so I'm concerned that we're capturing those loving families as well that are trying to guide their children in a loving and supportive way at the appropriate time. Every child deserves love and respect, and so I want any trans people out there listening to know that I support them. I feel comfortable saying that my caucus supports them. But my concerns are really around age to give consent and make these decisions, and parents should be involved, at least provided the opportunity to be involved in those decision making or those decisions. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I appreciate every single one of you. And I just want to reiterate what I said earlier on in the show, which is don't let people convince you that you're crazy. Don't let people convince you that you're extreme. That wanting lawmakers to use reason and common sense and not buying into every single thing they do and having serious questions does not make you right wing. It doesn't make you a nut. You know whether you are in the majority. This, and it doesn't even have to be moderate. I think it's about reasonable versus unreasonable. If you're able to look at things with an independent mind, make your own judgments, we need more of you speaking up. And I don't want you to ever let anyone scare you into silence by buying into the labels that they're going to try to place on you. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided, our Thursday live show. Remember, we do Sundays with subscribers every single week, and we have an awesome interview this week. Last week, we talked to a woman, a Black business owner in Seattle, who is really into these diversity, equity, inclusion initiatives. And I'm not. I think they're racist against whites. But we had a really awesome conversation. I really valued it. And we're going to have a similar conversation this week. I actually have a friend who, when the assault weapon ban passed, was in the pictures celebrating down in Olympia, has been a driving force for a lot of the gun control measures, the most controversial ones that have passed in this state. But I do still consider her a dear friend. In fact, I sent her a text after that and I said, you know, we disagree on this issue, but I know it means a lot to you. And so she's going to be joining us on the Sunday show to talk about gun control, the assault weapon ban. It's a conversation you're not going to want to miss. So if you want to support the show with your dark right wing money, if you want to sign up, go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And there you can find out how to subscribe on Patreon or Locals for $5 a month. Or you can also find out where you can see clips on YouTube, where you can listen to the show if you prefer to listen rather than watch. And you can also find a link to reach out to us if you've got tips or any juicy stuff you want to share. All right, that's it for today. Again, thank you for being here. Thanks for your commitment to this movement, to this mission of giving common sense a comeback.